Hey, my name is Kevin Clark. I'm the host of a new football podcast called Slow News Day. I want to tell you about it. On Mondays, Lindsey Jones and I will recap the weekend in football that was, as well as look ahead to what's next. On Wednesday, the normal Slow News Day, the thing you've been watching for years, current players, current coaches, current analysts talking about the football world. And on Friday, a wild card. Could be some college football, could be more pro stuff. It's a video podcast, so you can watch it on Spotify or listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on Spotify. It's Slow News.
It's the Ringers Philly special presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
Welcome to the Ringers Philly special Thursday morning edition. Sheil Kapadia here, joined by Ben Solak, ace producer Cliff Augustine. This is the Thursday show. I told you we're going to do a little variety on Thursdays, but a lot of stuff happening with the Eagles this week. So we're going to go Eagles focused here for the first segment. And of course, the return, highly anticipated return of Cliff's group chat in the second segment. Have no idea what's popping on the group chat this week, so we'll find out about that. Benjamin Solak, how are we doing? Have we done a morning pod before? This feels very different from what we're used to.
We had to have done one at some point, right? Like in August, like in the first weeks. I don't know. It's been a hot second, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I got the coffee out for the pod. We're feeling good.
There you go. You're feeling good. And I imagine you're feeling good too, because Darius Slay is returning to the Eagles. What a roller coaster yesterday.
We were saying, never wavered, never feared. Yeah. Not for one second. I was good the whole time. I was like, nah, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
We were saying, should we pod this evening? Should we pod this afternoon? And then we're saying, well, we don't know what's happening with Slay. Why don't we wait till it reaches some resolution? His wife tweeted it out. Then he tweeted it out last night that he is back with the Eagles. I'm going to get into what I think happened here, what my read is on sort of the ups and downs of what happened there, but just your general reaction to Slay being back as the outside corner with James Bradberry once again in 2023.
It makes sense. The quality of play that they got from Bradberry and the quality of play that they got from Slay, you want to bring back both of those players. Price tag wise, right? I'm up at whatever it was, 12:30 last night. I don't know. I could not fall asleep last night. But it was when that Slay news was coming out, and they were saying, oh, wait, maybe he's coming back. Nope, now this report, he's definitely coming back. And Jeff McLean tweets out that, all right, they're going to restructure his contract. So I'm up on Spot Rack screenshotting the old contract to make sure I don't lose it. This 8 hours from now, I wake up, something different's going to be happening. I got to have this data. But Slay was going to be a $26.1 million cap. It was going to be last year of his deal. And so presumably the Eagles came to him and said restructure. And Slay said pay raise. And then there was a discourse there that got tricky. And then agents got involved. And then they, you know, Slay said, well, if you were not going to raise my pay, maybe somebody in the open market would raise my pay. And then it became a whole thing. And I think at the end of the day, where they're going to arrive, as we get contract details, is this year's cap hit will be lowered a little bit. Slay will be given contracts into years on his contract into future years. Right now, he's only secured through the season. He'll get money in the next couple of seasons, secure his future in Philadelphia, give him some guaranteed deal, give some guaranteed cash, excuse me. That'll make him happy. And I think that'll make the Eagles happy. Like, Slay definitely is not the player he once was, but he's still a very solid starting corner in the NFL. And I think that he can retain that level of play for a couple of years. And so for a position at which they don't really have any developmental guys. There's no backup outside corner you feel really great about right now. I think securing Bradbury and Slay is a really important part of their offseason and a good feather in Howie Roseman's cap.
Yeah, I think just looking at 2023, Slay and Bradbury, you feel good about that. If it was either or, you were going to have to fill that outside corner spot. I have a bit of a different read than you on, and we'll see once the numbers come out. I don't think the Eagles really gave in at all here, and we'll see if they did or if they didn't. So here's what I think happened. Darius Slay was due $17 million. In 2023. That is a nice salary for a starting corner. I think that puts him, you know, among the top eight highest paid corners in the NFL. The Eagles, as we've talked about, don't have a lot of flexibility with their cap this offseason. They really have two moves they can make: restructure Darius Slay and restructure Lane Johnson. And I think in the discourse, it gets misinterpreted what a restructure means. I mean, a restructure can mean a pay cut, but in this case, I don't think it meant a pay cut for Darius Slay. If he's due $17 million and you're the Eagles and you just mentioned the cap number, you can say we will convert part of that into a signing bonus. You get that money in your pocket right away, and we have void years on the end of your contract that we can spread the cap hit out over future years, even when you're not part of the team. And so I think that's what the Eagles had planned to do. I think Darius Slay, usually for the player, I mean, a lot of times it gets framed as the player doing the team a favor. That's really, I mean, it is a little bit, but that's not really what it is. It's beneficial to the player. You get the cash in your pocket right away rather than spread out over game checks for an entire season. So I think the Eagles probably thought, all right, that's going to be pretty easy to do. The player will want to do this, but the player has to agree to it because you're changing the contract. And that goes to what you were saying about Slay and maybe more importantly, his agent Drew Rosenhaus saying, all right, we have to agree to this. We have a little bit of leverage. Hey, we want an extension beyond 2023. Slay played at an all-pro level last year. He's 32. You want to kind of maybe secure some more money now than you will be able to as a free agent next offseason. And Howie probably said, come on, Slay is 32. We're not giving him an extension. We're not giving him any more money. He's being paid handsomely in 2023. And then if you're Slay and Rosenhaus, you can say, all right, then we're not going to agree to the restructure. And that's going to make it harder for you to create cap space and make other moves that you want to make. So it's kind of this back and forth between team and player where both sides feel like they have a little bit of leverage. So I think that's why we got to the point yesterday where it was, hey, Slay's going to be released. Slay's going to get a chance to test the open market. Now, if you're Drew Rosenhaus, what are you able to get for Slay on the open market? Like, you're not going to get $17 million per year for Darius Slay at this age. However, could you get something like James Bradbury got, where maybe it's a less annual salary, but you get more guarantees there for a couple of years? Maybe you get $20 million guaranteed or something in that neighborhood. So I think Rosenhaus probably checked around and said, all right, let's see if we can get this deal. He couldn't get anything that was great, that was much better than what the Eagles are paying Slay in 2023. He comes back to the Eagles. Howie Roseman says, okay, we still like the player. We want him back. Let's work out a deal for this season. So I'm curious to see what the salary is going to be. I mean, it very well could be that Darius Slay is going to take a pay cut, given that he was planning on leaving. He comes back. It could be that he gets the exact same salary at $17 million here. Maybe you throw him a bone and give some incentives where, hey, if you make all pro, you get a bump here, that kind of thing. But I don't think there will be anything in this restructure that brings Darius Slay back to the Eagles beyond 2023. So it was almost, I think, a game of chicken where they both had some leverage. They both thought they could exercise it. But if you're Rosenhaus, you can't get a great deal for Darius Slay on the open market, given that he's 32 years old. So that's my sense of what happened. I hope that wasn't too confusing. I know it's boring to talk about salary caps and restructure and all that, but just as I was thinking about, all right, what actually happened here, that's what I thought. And maybe Howie Roseman will explain it. Maybe more reporting will come out and that will be wrong. But that's my read on kind of what happened in the last 24 hours with Darius Slay.
Right, so here's where my head's at. Because of the way void years work, there's three void years currently on Darius Slay's deal. In the event that Slay stays on this exact contract, comes back, and then leaves next season, all the dead money on 2024, 2025, and 2026 escalates, and the Eagles have to pay the bill in 2024, right? Right now, that'd be a $13.8 million dead cap hit for Darius Slay in 2024. It's a a healthy price. That's not small. The reason why 2024's dead cap to me is really important is because every time the Eagles sign Jason Kelce to an extension, they sign him to a one-year deal with void years. And if Kelce doesn't come back next year, he's a $6 million dead cap hit in 2024. You got to be worried about that. Brandon Graham, his one-year deal. Bring him back. He wants to keep playing. $5.6 million dead cap hit in 2024. Derek Barnett, who was signed, as we remember, to a large extension for some reason. $7.2 million dead cap hit, 2024. So if you start looking at the Eagles' bills in 2024, you start asking yourself, all right, if they aren't great next season and they kind of want to reload and wash everything over and reset the roster a little bit, they have the picks to do it, right? They have some extra picks in 2024 right now. They can do a little bit of a soft reset, which is a nice way to be set up. You know what I'm saying? I think that that's good team building. You've like guys like Rashad Penny, Boston Scott, Quez Watkins, Jack Stoll, like all these dudes, Jack Driscoll. It's like, I'm not naming like the most important players in the world here, but I'm saying they got a lot of guys who are role players for them who are up in 2024. There's room for a soft reset. But if I have the ability to get a $14 million dead cap hit instead of being in 24, get it in 25 and give myself a little bit of relief, I'd look into that. To me, I think that's something that the Eagles should poke around in, because right now they're looking at carrying a lot of dead money on that 2024 season. I didn't even mention Fletcher Cox, because we don't have details on Fletcher Cox, but it was a one-year, $10 million deal. Guarantee you there's some void years on that son of a gun.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of dead money coming down the mountain in 2024. And I'll be curious to see if it is important to Roseman to get Slay's figure off of 2024, which to me would indicate that they're trying to have a little bit more continuity, right? To just kind of like, you know, turn things over and get the roster younger year over year. Or if he does choose to keep it in 2024, I would imagine we're seeing the dominoes set up for a little bit of a soft reset for the Eagles after the 2023 season, where, okay, let's push with all these veterans right now. Let's try to win another championship, whatever. And then when we get to the end of that season, okay, maybe we can talk and do another, you know, one-year deal for Kelce if he wants it, one-year deal for Graham if he wants it. But in general, we're going to move on from a lot of guys. In the secondary, especially, like, Bradbury's going to be secured through 24. Maddox is secured through 24. I would imagine, like, keep Slay for an extra year, and you can kind of set it and forget it in the back end with your pillar players. To me, that's attractive. So I don't feel too strongly like it's got to be an extension. They have to add a year. I think they might want to, given where they're at accounting-wise. I think what they do will, yeah, tell us a lot about kind of where Roseman expects this roster to be 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, maybe it gives them an option to keep him for another year. Yeah, the void year thing, I mean, it's really, they've explained this before, that they just see the salary cap going higher and higher, and so you can push some of that money into future years if you need cap flexibility now, if you're in a window where you feel like you can win a Super Bowl now. And so I think that's why they use those on those veteran players. So we'll see what they do, but for 2023... Slay is back. Slay, Bradbury, Maddox, your three starting corners, a very good group of three starting corners back for the Eagles. One, well, this has been thrown out there, and I've, you know, been on this island for, to steal a Nora Princiati podcast term there, for a long time. What do you think about the possibility of moving Avante Maddox to safety? He's played there before. I liked him there before. I worry a little bit about his durability, given that he's had durability issues at corner. Now you're all of a sudden asking him to play safety. But do you think, would you like to see him as an option at safety if you don't bring Chauncey Gardner-Johnson back? And Gardner-Johnson is still a free agent as we record this on Thursday morning. And then find somebody else to play slot corner, which really, I mean, if we're talking about where, you know, supply outweighs demand in the NFL, I would say slot corner is one of those positions where you can generally find somebody to give you high floor play. You can even find a younger player, a rookie player, to fill that hole. Would you like to see Maddox, if they don't bring Gardner Johnson back, get a look at safety with a new coordinator, Sean Desai?
Nothing drives me crazier than let's move good player to different position and see if he also becomes good player there. Drives me nuts. It is especially true in the world of corner to safety. Now, I think Maddox could move to safety successfully. I think he has the necessary traits to do so. He's got good vision. He's got great instincts. He understands how to play in zone. He's a physical tackler. He'll step down. He's got the tools you need. And I think it would benefit the Eagles and Sean Desai's defense, if he can do that, and then they can plug in a Maddox-esque player at nickel. I think that second half of that sentence is a lot harder than there's a lot of good nickels. You can find a young guy plug and chug. Like they, I disagree. There's a lot of good nickels. There's a lot of good corners who are small, who get put in the slot to kind of just run around and chase slot receivers. But guys who like step down and put their shoulder into the chest of a tight end, guys who can like be part of the run fit, which is what you have to do when you're a nickel corner. To me, there's fewer guys than that. And one of the impressive things about Maddox is how good he is against the run, despite being how small he is. Fundamentally, to me, I have a talented player in Avante Maddox, who I know is good at slot corner. Slot corner is closer to the ball, is closer to the action, is closer to plays. More things happen. There's more influence over the game than there is at safety. And I know he's good there. And so we used to do this with Rasul Douglas, and it would drive me nuts. Yeah, like he might be a good safety, but if you just like give him a year's worth of investment at corner, he's going to be a good corner. And the Eagles never did, and then he went to Green Bay, and what happened? Right? Like you have a guy at like a premium position. Just invest in the dude at the premium position. It's always a grass is a greener thing. Like, oh, he'll go to safety and he'll be incredible. If he'd been an incredible safety, somebody would have already figured this out. Somebody would have already got him there and whatever. Maddox is a great slot corner. Leave him at slot corner. Figure out safety a million different ways.
I say take a look. See, take a look. He's played there before. It's not like it's somebody who you don't have any reps of him doing that. I disagree that someone would have figured it out. I think it's just based on a coordinator's preferences generally and who else they have on the roster. So, yes, it's a puzzle. I mean, you would have to see, all right, well, then who is playing slot corner? Do you have someone on the roster? I agree with you. You don't want to downgrade there and then move Maddox at safety and say, where did that really get us? But I think it's something to keep an eye on based on who they add here in the rest of free agency, trade market, draft, and keep it open as an option, something you might look into. All right, let's take a quick break. We will get back and talk about Fletcher Cox.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
All right, we are back on the Ringers Philly special. Bit of a surprise, Fletcher Cox back again. It's going to be the year 2035. Hey, they're bringing back Fletcher Cox on another one-year deal. Gets 1 year, $10 million. I had him down, I think I said in our pre-show, as an $8 or $9 million player. He gets a little bit more than that. The reports were that he took a hometown discount, that the Jets were interested in Fletcher Cox. I usually think the old, like, oh, you know, player turned down money for less money to stay here. Like, usually it's a lie or it's fabricated, and it's like, yeah, he took less money, but he got more guarantees. I can kind of buy it. in this instance. Just if you look at the defensive tackle market, David Onyemata got $11.7 million per year. Larry Ogunjobi got $9.6 million per year. Shelton Rankins got $10.5 million per year. So I can buy that the Jets and maybe another team would have been willing to go to like $11.5 million for Fletcher Cox. All right, I'm going to give you the two sides of this, Ben, and then you tell me which side you land on. So, you know, you have a friend, they're talking themselves into this move. They say, listen, Fletcher Cox had 7 sacks and 34 pressures last year. Those are top 10 to 15 numbers for a defensive tackle in the NFL. The Eagles already lost Javon Hargrave. They needed somebody to take those snaps as defensive tackle. Cox has been extremely durable. He's missed just one game in the last 5 seasons. I don't even know if that was injury related or if that was just him getting like a week 18 game off. He can give you competent starting caliber defensive tackle play. This is the price for a competent starting defensive tackle. It's fine. It's 1 year. You're not signing him to a long-term extension. There's no way. I have no issue with it. So that's person number one. Person number two says, what are they doing? They're doing this again. Howie's got the fat head of Fletcher Cox in his office there. He's just going to sign him to these one-year deals and overpay. Yeah, right. The Jets weren't going to give him more than $10 million a year. This is a clearly declining player. We've all seen it with our own eyes on film for the last, 3 years or so? Like last year, fine. You want to do it one time and get sentimental for a guy who's been a great Eagle, part of a Super Bowl team, that's fine. But you're doing it again? How are you doing it again? You could have taken a flyer on a younger player who might be ascending, who might have more upside. Instead, you're being sentimental and paying a player for his age 32 season. Howie, what are you doing? All right. Who are you with? Person A or person B? And did I miss any key points?
I'm person C, and I'm sitting there going, guys, this is great discourse. You guys clearly listen to a lot of good Philly pods, and I appreciate the varying of approaches. You got to play the mediator. I think I side more with person A. I think, like, to me, the useful construction is this. Think about Fletcher Cox the way you think about Ndamukong Suh and Linval Joseph from last year, and, like, jack it up a couple notches, right? Because in terms of how often he's going to be on the field, he's going to be, I think, a rotational player. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to have him in the starting lineup the way they have previously. But to me, like, they're going to continue to use a really deep offensive line rotation, a really deep defensive line rotation in order to keep his snap counts regularly manageable, right? If you look at, like, the Eagles snap counts last season in terms of how they use their defensive line guys and at what rates, right? Fletch was looking at, like, 74% of the snaps in week 4, 70% in week 5, 75% in week 6.
Yeah, I got the total here. It's 65% for the entire regular season, according to Pro Football Reference.
Yeah, yeah. So, like,
oh, sorry, you wanted to show the... Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the progression. Yeah, yeah. So, right, he had like 84% in week 10, 74% in week 11. But by the time they got to the end of the season, right, Jordan Davis comes back from injury. Milton Williams starts to come along a little bit. 49%, 45%, 68%, 68%, 65%, 62%. Going to the playoffs, 54%, 52%. And then in the Super Bowl, he played 82%, which, like, you know, all right, he's got fresh legs. Like, we don't need to do any, you know, we're rushing the passer here. You know what I'm saying? This is the game in which we need Fletch. And so when you start to think about, like, a snap percentage that's at 60% and probably still, like, arrow pointing generally downward if the Eagles have their druthers, this is not a guy who's taken the majority of the snaps the way he used to. But like I say, it's still ratcheted up a couple steps from Sue. It's ratcheted up a couple steps from Linval in terms of how many snaps they're going to take, right? Linval, Sue's at the point where he was taking like 35, 40% of the snaps at the end of the season. So it's ratcheted up a couple notches and you pay a couple notches more of money accordingly. It's like, oh, you shouldn't pay that much for a rotational player. Well, like you brought up, Sue, it was like top 10 in pressures. Like if you're using him as just like, all right, time to press the pass rush button, 91, get in there. It's about as good of a 91 get in there as you'll get across the league. Just, you know, let's put out a good pass rushing defensive tackle and go wreak some havoc. So I don't mind it for that reason. There's a hometown discount that he's taking relative to if he went bag chasing, but there's also like a hometown up price he gets because his contract here used to be bigger. You know what I'm saying? Whereas like if he was being viewed as just a rotational guy elsewhere in the league, which I think the majority of teams would view him as that, they probably wouldn't pay him 1 year with $10 million escalators. They pay him like 1 year with 8, 1 year with 7. The Jets, who desperately need defensive tackle help, looked like they were ready to like kind of back up the truck for him a little bit. And that's the Jets the Jets handling their own situation. You know, I don't think they're a good proxy for the rest of the league. And so to me, Fletcher is a really good situational player. He's a great pass rusher. The Eagles are going to try to put him in those situations as often as they can and hopefully find a lot of success. The big question for me is Desai as good at that as John Gannon was? Because, you know, for as much guff as we like to give Gannon, Gannon was really good about getting the right defensive lineman on the field at the right time, maximizing these dudes. You know, you can't be third in the league in single-season sack numbers in league history and not at least give the defense coordinator some feathers for setting up his defensive lineman. Desai's got to do the same thing because, as we know, Fletch, you know, can loaf a little bit, and you got to make sure you get him on the field and he's motivated and he likes his snaps and he likes his roles. And so that's the tricky thing, is handling the interpersonal aspect of it.
Yeah, I think he'll be happy if he's on the field for pass rushing situations, third down. The snap counts thing is interesting because they had so many blowouts that it's like I'm looking at the thing. It's hard to know what to make of it. Like the two playoff games, 54% and 52%. Like that's probably, you know, part of that is because they were killing the Giants and killing the Niners. And so he didn't need to be on the field in the fourth quarter. Like you mentioned, against the Chiefs, he plays 82% of the snap. So they clearly thought he was their best option in terms of a pass rusher, an interior pass rusher to be on the field. So I still think he's going to be a starter. I would still think he would settle in around 60%, 60, 65% of the snaps next year. Like you said, we'll see how they rotate defensive linemen and whether it's different. I think I lead pretty much towards person one, person A. What did I call him? I should have given him a name.
You called the person A and person
okay.
B.
Yep. Next time I'll give him names so it's easier. I think I lean that way too. I mean, this is not a move like at the beginning of free agency, I would have said, all right, this is the move to make. I would be fine with this. Looking at what the other defensive tackles got on the market, I think it's reasonable. I mean, I would have been okay going Jordan Davis, Milton Williams, and let's see who's even still available. I think we mentioned Matt Ioannidis, Apuna Ford. Let's see what those types of players actually get. Calais Campbell, by the way, I was very intrigued by him filling this, basically this exact role. So let's see what he gets, because I think it's going to be less. It might be like six.
You were very excited about Calais Campbell. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he could have filled a very similar role to the one you just outlined for Fletcher Cox there. Now, he's like 5 years older than Fletcher Cox, so I'm not saying that one would have been a home run and solved any of your problems. So I think I probably would have tried to go in a different direction and tried to find a younger player with upside, but it's hard for me to say that definitively when I don't know what those other guys are going to get on the open market. So I'm not outraged by this move. I don't think this is a move I would have made, but I understand the reasoning for it. So let's see how the rest of the defensive tackle rotation plays out. All right, I want to do this exercise now. Well, first, no, I'm going to ask you first. Zoom out a little bit. We're kind of through this first week or whatever of free agency. Kelce comes back. Brandon Graham comes back. Fletcher Cox comes back. They sign Rashad Penny. They sign Boston Scott. I think I hit all of the big moves there. They lose TJ Edwards. They lose Javon Hargrave. They lose Kaiser White. They lose Marcus Epps. Seumalo is still out there. Minshew is still out there. They lose Miles Sanders. I didn't mention him. How do you feel? Like, what's your feeling on how this first stage of the offseason and the player moves we've seen have gone? And then I want to run through a little exercise on that same topic.
Generally good. I'm happy with the number of players they brought back and the caliber of players they brought back. I realized last night when I was looking at it, like, you know, if you kind of just boil it down, in free agency, we always get into the nuance, we get into the weeds, you know, the cost-benefit. Boil it down, when we talked about the good players on the Eagles' defense, we were talking about James Bradbury and Darius Slay. You know, how many weeks did we come in and we said, like, holy smokes, these guys are incredible. And when we talked about, you know, players who had weak points during, like, losses, during bad defensive performances, at least for me, like, I was often talking about Epps. And less as the season went on, but certainly still, I was occasionally talking about TJ. And those are the players who aren't here anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's... I think the Eagles kept the good players, which is always like, you know, again, like whenever you want to do this sort of a step back, take a step back exercise, fundamentally, did you get good players on the roster? Did you keep good players on the roster? And I think like the Eagles were very successful in that regard. I think two of the biggest dominoes that I expected to fall this offseason have yet to fall. And that's the Chauncey Gardner-Johnson contract and then the potential of a Jalen Hurts extension, which... the quarterback market is in a weird place right now with this whole Lamar situation.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think if I were ownership, I would be saying, let's read the room on this Lamar thing. Let's see what happens and then go from there. But it would be very defensible for the Eagles to say, hey, before this Lamar situation sets a precedent we don't want to deal with Jalen Hurts, let's get this extension done. I wouldn't mind that either. Like, I find that very justifiable. And so we haven't heard much, if anything, about a Jalen Hurts extension. And obviously, we've heard a ton about the Eagles trying to keep Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. There was a report last night that the Broncos are interested in him. The Broncos do not have a lot of cap space right now. The Eagles do not have a lot of cap space right now. I definitely think Chauncey is not finding the deal on the open market that he thought and hoped he would. So those are the two dominoes that, like, to me, were like, if you had made me bet pre-free agency, which one defensive player do they keep, I probably would have bet Chauncey. And they've kept, like, five guys since then, and none of them are Chauncey. And so that domino and the Hurts domino are the two that I'm kind of still waiting for with bated breath. But as it stands right now, Kelsey Graham Cox, Bradbury Slay, Rashad Penny, like, yeah, that's solid day's work.
Yeah, if they bring back Gardner Johnson, now all of a sudden 4/5 of your defensive backfield is back, which I don't think anybody thought was going to be the case when free agency started. So we'll see what happens there. I'm with you. I think if he would have gotten a nice offer, he would have taken that at this point. So now it's just a matter of how much is Chauncey Gardner Johnson going to have to come down from what his expectations were. Cliff, I got one quick question for you, if you have a second. Before we do this exercise, what's the name of your friend who's like the biggest hater, who, like, and we're going to get to the group chat segment after this, but just like the most negative fan who, no matter what's happening, they're like, no, you know, fire Howie, fire Doc.
The most negative fan.
Yeah.
You know what's funny?
Do you have someone like that?
Yeah. I think, all right. So it's my boy. I think it's my boy, Rob. It's a tie. Okay. It's a tie. There's two. There's this one group chat that I'm in with my old coworkers at ESPN. And one is my boy Rob, who's actually from Puerto Rico, but like grew up in Philly for some time. He is super, like, bro, everything. It's like you're listening to 94 WIP like all day on repeat. Like, that's how negative he is. And Johnny, who I'm going to get to in a second, he made a crazy comment last night. He's actually from California, but he's a big time Eagles fan. This is before, you know, LA got, you know, two teams and the Chargers and the Rams. But he, man, you want to talk about negative Nancy, but then can flip the script like in an instant. Like, you won't believe the range of emotions he had with the Slay signing last night. It was insane. So those two, probably Rob and Johnny.
You know what?
My boy Akeem, too, he's in the same chat. I went to Temple with him. We worked together. We lived together for some years, too. Akeem is, oh, man. If you want to talk about negative, there's nothing good that ever comes out of Philly. Everybody sucks. Everybody stinks. Like, you know, Nick Sirianni's bad. You know, the only people that he likes is Jalen Hurts and maybe one guy on defense. Akeem is bad. And he's from Philly. He's from Norristown. Akeem is really, 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 like, really negative. There's the Sixers can do no good. Howie Roseman stinks. That's another guy.
Okay, I like it. All right, so I'm going to keep these names in the rotation for this exercise with Benjamin.
Smart,
and then
smart.
The next segment, we're going to get to Cliff's group chat. All right, so here's the exercise, Ben. We're going to go with Keem for this one, since Cliff finished with him. Here's Keem's take on the Eagles offseason so far. Okay, everyone's just praising everything Howie Roseman's doing. You still have that Super Bowl glow. Here's how Keem sees it, okay? They're worse at running back. They're worse at offensive line, assuming Seumalo doesn't come back. They're worse at defensive tackle. You lose Javon Hargrave. They're worse at linebacker. They lose TJ Edwards. They're worse at safety. We don't know if Gardner Johnson's coming back. You lose Epps. They're worse at backup quarterback. It looks like Minshew could go to the Colts. They have not improved the roster at any single position this offseason. Meanwhile, they're paying Jason Kelce, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, and James Bradbury roughly $43 million in 2023. All those players are in their 30s. You add in Darius Slay, you're talking well over $50 million in decisions made in the last week committed to players who are in their 30s. They have not gotten younger. They have not gotten better. These are all players who are in the declining stages of their career, who the likelihood of them playing as well in 2023 as they played in 2022 is highly unlikely. So please tell me, tell Keem why he should be excited at all about what the Eagles have done this offseason when it feels like they've just been sentimental, signed a bunch of older players, and they're paying for past performance and not looking at how they can improve this team and get over the hump and compete for a Super Bowl again in 2023.
I'll tell you, Keem, here's the thing about improving on the best offensive line. Tough to do. You hit a ceiling. Here's the thing about being number one. You can't get any better. Defensive line, right? Defensive tackle. As probably was the best rotation in the league last year. Tough to improve on it. You're going to inherently lose somebody. That's the thing is, like, the Eagles were always going to get worse. It was a matter of to what degree, at what areas, and how could they patch it up? Kind of what young players are they going to rely on, right? You see, the expectation of Javon Hargrave leaving, and you say, okay, well, hopefully, like, you know, Milton Williams comes together, we draft Jordan Davis, like, we need to start looking a little bit different at defensive tackle. You see, like, expectations of Chauncey Gardner-Johnson leaving. They don't really have young guys back there. You see expectations of the corners leaving. Well, they don't really have young guys back there, so they're probably going to do more to resign those players to make sure they have those gaps filled up. The expectation of Kelsey leaving. I mean, Landon Dickerson and then Cam Jurgens. They've been so attentive to that interior position and caring about that spot. And so the Eagles bringing back the same guys, yes, means that they're just the same team they were last year, but with a few more gaps. But they've been trying to anticipate where they need to fill spots with young players and trying to develop those players. And this is the nature of being a really good roster, is that there are some cracks in the armor that are going to show up, and then you're going to have to kind of deal with those accordingly. Like, the Eagles roster is so good. It's so good that there's no way time won't make it worse. You can't sustain a roster this talented with this much money. It can't be done. And so enjoy it while it lasts, Keem. Chillax.
All right. I thought Keem made some good points there. I mean, honestly, you could really paint it that way. I think, you know, what you said is fair. I think it really speaks to how much they have riding on younger players in key spots. I mean, Jordan Davis, N'Kobe Dean, Cam Jurgens, potentially, whoever they draft. I mean, I think they had their rookies play the fewest snaps of any draft class last year. And I mean, a big part of that was they were the healthiest team in the NFL last year. So you didn't need to rely on those guys. But, you know, I think you need to go into 2023 knowing that the schedule is going to be harder than it was last year. The injury luck is almost certainly not going to be as good as it was last year. These players in their 30s who were so good last year, maybe they don't drop off that much, but they're probably going to start to decline a little bit, at least some of them. And so now how do you make up for that? It's got to be these first and second year players are going to have to contribute. You're going to have to get some surprises there. You're going to have to get some development there if you're really going to sustain and compete for a Super Bowl once again. So I think that's, that was part of the exercise. But I'm curious. I do feel like it's been generally and this is just looking at social media and text threads and everything else. I feel like there's generally been a positive vibe about the Eagles offseason, and we've gone through the moves, and you know, I think they've done a good job for the most part. Most of these are moves that I would have made also. At the same time, it's worth zooming out and saying, well, it might not be great next year if the younger players don't develop. All right, let us finish with the segment that took America, took Philadelphia, took the world by storm last week. Cliff's group chat. Cliff tells us what is popping on the group chats in Philadelphia sports. I think he had a draft question last week, Ben, which I just was like, we got to defer to this for whenever Ben's on. I don't know if there's going to be some Sixers in there. I've got some thoughts on the Sixers and their win last night over the Cavs. Maybe it's Eagles free agency. It could go in a number of different directions. Cliff, what do we got going on in the group chats? What's the first topic we're getting to this week?
All right. So according to you, what's popping in the group chat, right? I'm sorry. Yo, I had to get at you for that one. That was funny. So remember how I referenced my boy Johnny, right? I referenced him a little bit earlier. He's super negative, but then, you know, once something goes our way, he's just like extremely positive. Like the spectrums are just so extreme.
No middle ground.
None whatsoever. So This is after the reports that Darius Slay was released and Fletcher Cox was signed back to the Eagles. I quote, I'm not even going to say anything, right? This is just a text message that was received in the group chat. Fletch back two. Good rinse. Little play slay. Exclamation point. True Eagles stay little hungry for that slay. Ring.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Thoughts.
Wait, what was the last thing? Little play slay and then what?
True Eagles staying hungry for that ring.
So is he's happy because, that Slay is like he's saying no, see a Slay?
He said good riddance, little play Slay. Like, damn, like the dude just helped you get to the Super Bowl last year. Now he has to be called little play Slay. Like, is that not crazy?
Eagles still chasing that ring does not apply to let's get rid of our very good corner. That would apply to let's keep our very good corner, who's old and like costs a lot of money or whatever. Little play Slay is cold though. That's tough. If that hasn't been uttered by like DK Metcalf or CeeDee Lamb at some point, they gotta start working with Johnny. Start working on their material. That's a good one.
No. I was gonna say, yeah, I did see some like, you know, stats circulating about Darius Slay, his coverage stats in the second half versus the first half of the season. I mean, coverage stats are so wonky. I would not read anything into them, specifically when you have a team that plays like 75% zone. I mean, I don't know what targets are being attributed to Darius Slay. I thought he played well for most. I mean, there were so many weeks last season where we're just like, oh, Slay didn't get targeted this week, or oh, they threw it Slay once this week. Like, I thought he was a really good player.
They were up by 21 player. In the third quarter, and Darius Slay gave up a first down. And it's like, yeah, well, okay.
Right. All right, what else we got, Clay?
I actually had a bone to pick, right? Because the amount of tweets that I was receiving that were related to Gardner Johnson and Darius Slay's wife and everybody talking about free agency and like, come on, guys, like, are we coming back? Or see you, Philly. It was nice seeing y'all. And Gardner Johnson just tweeting the periods, dot, 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 like waiting for his. I'm like, bro, what are y'all doing? Like, to me, listen, tweet all you want. But my goodness, I was just so annoyed by it. I was just like, man, don't sign any of these guys back at this point. Like, I was just super bothered by it. I'm like, why do y'all have to play out your whole entire free agency on Twitter? Like, literally giving us minute-to-minute updates without telling us, you know, what's going on, no deals were signed, nothing like that. It's just second by second, they're tweeting emojis of something stupid. And you got AJ Brown talking about proteins and fruits and all that. I'm like, bro, what are y'all tweeting this? What are y'all tweeting every second of the day for? Relax, your deal is going to come, whether it's with the Eagles or not. Just calm down, okay? It's coming. Your money is coming. How do y'all feel about that?
It's a very online group. Yes. Like, yeah, the play by play. And it's very cryptic. I mean, I know Ben was like, you know, decoding what Javon Hargrave's emojis meant last week. That's kind of what you have to have that skill to do that, because I'm with you. I'm looking at him going, wait, now Slay was pretty. He did do some eye emojis, right? Like in the middle there, where we didn't know if he's, all right, what does that mean?
But he fooled himself. My man fooled himself. Yeah. He literally said, see you, Philly. Like, he played himself on Twitter because he just couldn't keep his hands, keep his Twitter fingers together.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Should answer this. You can't keep your Twitter. Yeah, you would be, if Ben was a free agent, oh my gosh, he would be, every 30 minutes, we'd be getting something from him.
Okay. See, I got news for you. I don't tweet a lot.
You're tweeting during the show. You're literally tweeting during the show. And instead of listening to our conversation, being engaged in the podcast, you're tweeting about who you're marching
to commercial.
You're tweeting who you're saying you're committed to Vermont beating Marquette. I mean, Cliff, come on. He is this type of free agent.
I've got Ruiz in my DMs trying to help me figure out my bracket, which I have to submit by noon today. I didn't know that.
Ben, how much college basketball have you watched this season?
Zero. Absolutely zero. by design. This is the objective. And then you go you watch the tournament and you turn on Colgate versus Arizona. Who are they playing? I don't remember. And then you're like, hey, these guys are fun. And then you just decide to be extremely emotionally invested in Colgate. That's the best way to live. This is the Roger Sherman way. I love more than anything free agent player transaction period tweets, because every single one gets interpreted and matters so much. Like when AJ Brown started tweeting about vegetables, everybody was like, what does this mean for Eagles free agency? Until AJ Brown clarified that it wasn't. If I were a player, I would schedule on like the new year. No, for Christmas. I do it for Christmas. On Christmas, I would schedule three tweets with just an eye emoji. One for like February 27th. Another for like March 13th, one like July 12th, and then I would just forget about them. And then eventually, at some point in that day, people would be talking about, like, oh, maybe Justin Jefferson's going to demand a trade for the Vikings. And then 4 hours later, one of my iEmoji tweets would go out that I completely forgot about. And it'd be a news cycle for 24 hours. I find it hilarious when NFL free agents are like, I have to express how I feel with as few human characters, English letters of the alphabet as possible. And then we all spend time interpreting it. To me, that's the funniest thing in the world. So I love it. I love that Darius Slay is terminally online. I love that it was like to his detriment. It like revealed how the sausage is made of NFL contracts. I find that delightful.
That's true. Like if he didn't say anything, I mean, he didn't ever actually get released. I mean, we might have, there's a scenario where like 20 years ago, we don't even know what happened. And it's like, yeah, of course, Darius Slay's on the team. What are you talking about? He's under contract for 2023. So I guess it's good for content and entertainment, but I'm kind of with you, Cliff. I have these moments as the old man where I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why do you need to do that? Just like chill. You don't need to. I don't like to be online more than I have to. Like, why do you like to be online so much? But like, it entertains. All right. What
man,
else?
I'm getting old, man. I'm getting up there.
That was tweets a good one. That was a good one.
Tweets starting to annoy me. I'm getting super duper old. All right, now shit. We got to touch on the Sixers, right? Last night, Sixers get a nice victory in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Ben, I'm sure you're watching too. I know you love watching the Sixers now as the season winds down. Embiid, a calm 36-18, I believe it was last night.
Four blocks.
Could have had an offensive foul at the end of the game, but I guess the refs saw a flop and it wasn't an offensive foul. So he continues on to make that MVP push. And guess what? He is now the MVP favorite on FanDuel. As of last night, I believe it was at -105.
I thought I saw +100 here. I got it right up here.
Yeah.
He's still the favorite though. Yeah. +100. Let me pull it up. He is +100. Jokic is +160. So Embiid now the favorite to win MVP.
And that's according to FanDuel, correct?
FanDuel. Yeah. Of course. Okay. We're a FanDuel shop. Come on. Right. You think I would look at any other sports book?
Just making sure. I don't want us to mess up the buddy. But anyways, as Embiid makes this MVP push here, chill. Do you like Chris came on this podcast just last week and said, listen, guys, I think as this thing shakes up after, you know, Kendrick Perkins made his comments about how MVP voting has been swayed and how Jokic already got the MVP, even though Embiid is out here doing his thing, playing every single night since he got healthy. Are we actually going to see Joel Embiid get this MVP this year?
I think so. I think the tide has turned with the way the Sixers are playing now, have won six in a row, with the way the Nuggets have been more up and down. I also think the big voices in like basketball discourse really have an influence, you know, like Bill Simmons. Like he was talking earlier this week about how, you know what, he might be shifting towards Embiid. Zach Lowe of ESPN, I know he was on a podcast earlier this week kind of saying the same thing. And then you mentioned obviously the guys, the ex-players on TV. And so I think he's going to do it. I mean, they've got a lot of big games. We talked about it last week when Chris Ryan made that comment where we were looking at the schedule. They've got that stretch of a bunch of big games. And I'm loving this, by the way. Before the All-Star break, it was like the Sixers schedule after the All-Star break is impossible. I love that they've got so many big games. They are playing such an entertaining brand of basketball right now. And all these games are, you know, either they're coming back or they're tight. They've just been so much more fun than the previous versions of these Sixers teams. And so, I think he's going to. I mean, I think now that it's swung, unless he gets injured or something happens, like I don't see his place. I mean, last night he just came out and was basically like, it kind of reminded me, remember when Ben was saying before the Eagles played the Titans, he was saying like the Titans are going to test like how much do you love playing football? Like Embiid came out in that game and was like, all right, young buck, Evan Mobley, you're getting a lot of hype. You're going to feel this tomorrow one way or the other. I don't know if you're going to win battles or I'm going to win battles or we're going to win the game, but you're going to have to hit like the cold tub after this game, or you're going to have to get some work done tomorrow morning. Like he came out just from the get-go, was so physical. I mean, we take these games for granted, these box scores, 36, 18, and four blocks. That box score this entire season has happened one other time where someone's hit those numbers in all three of those categories. And for Embiid, it's like, all right, it's just another night. I mean, he's stacking game after game. I thought his defense was fantastic last night. It's been a little bit more up and down this year, but I thought he was absolutely, he has the highlight moves. I mean, that spin with like the drop step against the double team, you know the play I'm talking about. So I thought he was great last night. And I think the momentum's really building for Embiid, and he's he's going to do it. Ben, what do you think?
Imagine not having multiple Embiid to win MVP tickets sent over the course of the season while watching him play. Could not be me, who is the proud owner of three separate MVP tickets since the beginning of the season. Sixers to win the Atlantic plus 800 from like 3 weeks ago. We don't see box scores like this from Embiid. We don't see box scores like this anywhere else but from Embiid. Yes, but like it absolutely is the Titans thing. It's watching him play. It's watching every other NBA basketball and then watching Embiid play and realize, oh, there's nobody else who plays ball like this. And other teams are not prepared for seeing somebody play ball like this, and they don't have an answer for it. The Sixers' future in the playoffs is really tricky for me to figure out, frankly, like once the regular season ends, just because it becomes 7-game series. So there becomes a lot more of specific game plans. And that's where it becomes time for our man, Glenn, good old Glenn Rivers, to start earning his money. And as we've seen in the second round of the last 19 playoff series, Glenn can struggle in those 7-game series and making the adjustments and the counterattacks and the adjustments to the adjustments. But in these one-off moments, right? Oh, you know, heading to Cleveland, heading to Memphis, heading to Boston. Even for the teams that are supposed to know Embiid, Boston and Milwaukee, he's even faster than he was. He's even better being physical than he was, even better drawing fouls than he was. He's just such a different brand of basketball than they're accustomed to playing. And in the regular season, to me, that typifies the conversation around an MVP. The team is more formed around him and his play style, his character, than any other team, any other individual over the course of the league. And I like to joke that I don't watch Nuggets games, but I do. And Jokic has a great case for that. Like the Nuggets are built around Jokic and his character and his style in the exact same way. However, in this season, especially late, Embiid has been remarkably more dominant. He's been remarkably more impactful. He should win the MVP. He should be the favorite. I should win all my bets is also, you know, as an addendum.
Also, happy birthday, Joel Embiid, as well. We gotta wish a happy birthday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I didn't even notice that. They didn't mention that last night of the broadcast at all.
The reason I'm more bullish on them now than I have been in a while is kind of the role players. It feels like someone's stepping up every night. I mean, I thought Shake Milton had a very underrated, like, terrific performance in his minutes last night. He sets up Niang for that three-pointer at the end of the quarter. He had another dribble drive where he sets up PJ Tucker, gets an and one. He's 3-for-3 from beyond the arc. Niang hit a couple big threes in that game. It feels, you know, McDaniels was injured, but I feel like he's someone who can give
upgrade
you that
upgrade over
well,
Matisse so. Thybulle, by the way. Upgrade over Matisse Thybulle, yeah. By the way. I hate to say it to all my my Thybulle lovers.
Overall upgrade over Matisse, absolutely.
Overall, you know.
Yeah. I refuse to be tricked into believing into a Sixers bench player. I'll never do it again. For as long as I live, I'll be 75. And I'm like, no. Like, that sixth man they got? Absolutely not. With that said, gosh, McDaniels Niang is just such better energy. It's such better work than they've ever had off of the bench.
And Paul Reed. Don't forget about Paul Reed, too.
The ability to bring Maxey off the bench if they want to do that kind of situationally and get juice that way is so nice. My enthusiasm for their bench, however, is muted by the Tobias Harris game we got last night, where I can't with this dude. Nobody puts more gray hair on my head than Tobias Harris over the course of a calendar year.
Man, we've been saying that for 4 years. 4 years we've been saying that about Tobias Harris. It's tough, but
sometimes you know he's playing. Other times it's the third quarter with 4 minutes left, and you're like, wait, he was? I thought he was a DNP tonight. Okay, he is actually playing. You know, like, what did he get? He got his first. They're like, Tobias Harris with his first field goal. They're like 4 minutes left in the second quarter, I think, last night. I thought PJ Tucker, by the way, great energy last night. That was like a classic, like, all right, this is why you get PJ Tucker in like a playoff atmosphere. Type game. So I liked what I saw from him last night too. All right. I think those are all my Sixers stakes. Cliff, what were you going to say?
Can I get one more point on PJ Tucker, man? People keep texting me. I'm like, bro, his impact is not quantified by the box score. I keep telling you, watch the damn games. He is scrappy as hell. He gets like even a tip out that leads to somebody else getting a rebound should be a rebound. It's like a hockey assist. Mm-hmm. So I keep telling people, look, PJ Tucker is not there to score a million points. He's there to stand in a corner, hit a three, spread the floor, which Matisse Thybulle couldn't do. Again, it feels like I'm attacking Matisse Thybulle, but I'm the fans that love that guy, just it really just bothers me because I know they're just looking at numbers and they're not watching these games. But PJ impacts the game so much more. And you can tell, like, last year they was kind of soft, like, towards the end of the season, right? Like, when they went to Miami, I felt like Jimmy Butler and them punked the hell out of the Sixers. And PJ yes. Tucker was on the Heat. But now he's on the Sixers, and I see, like, a different type of, like you said, Ben, energy, a different type of just resilience. You know what I'm saying? And it impacts the bench because I see dudes like George Niang barking even more now. I see McDaniels coming in confident. I see Shake Milton. He's had an even better year. And Paul Reed, I guarantee you, Paul Reed was like a dude that's been taken under, you know, PJ's wing or other guys like that constantly. Even Tyrese Maxey, he said the same thing. He's like, yo, PJ Tucker and James Harden on and off the court, you know, they show me mad love. And they instilled a confidence in me, and they make sure, like, I get off and I do my thing. And the Sixers kind of have a big three with Tyrese Maxey because of his ability and the confidence that he has from all the other vets on the Sixers. And one more thing I wanted to point out was the Embiid and Harden both lead the league in points, and Harden leads the league in assists. That hasn't been done in 40 years since George Gervin and Johnny Moore of the Spurs back in 81 and 82. So what is that, 42 or 41 or 42 years? That's crazy. Harden. Yeah. We didn't even speak enough about Harden. Harden down the stretch of these games too, hitting big shots, being scrappy, actually playing defense down the stretch of games. I remember that Bucks game a couple Saturdays ago. He actually guarded Giannis a bunch too. I mean, if we get that type of Harden in this playoffs, I really, really, really think this team has a chance to go deep in the playoffs. I really do. Because last year, Harden was clearly not himself. The hamstring was hurting him pretty bad coming out of the Nets thing, that whole Ben Simmons trade or whatever the case may be. But this year, Harden looks like he controls the offense. He knows everything about it. The pick and roll of him and Embiid is just unstoppable. And you can tell by the assist numbers. I mean, some games he has 18, 12, 15 assists. Like, that's a common night for him. And he's hitting, you know, 2-3 threes a game. So I'm loving what I'm seeing from Harden as well.
Yeah, his basketball IQ is something when you don't watch, if you're not watching, like, I never watch Harden every night like I'm doing now. Like, and that just stands out. Like, he makes smart, great decisions time and time and time again. And even last night, like, it was the third quarter. I was like, oh, this is kind of like the worst Harden game we've gotten in a while. And the fourth quarter, he starts hitting some big shots and sets them up and had some nice stretches there in the fourth quarter. And like the PJ Tucker thing, it's like if the offense was struggling and you're like, oh man, he's not, then I could see it. They have like one of the best offense they've had with Joel Embiid. This is one of the best offenses in the NBA. He's shooting 40% from three. It's kind of like that's what you got him for. So yeah, I'm as excited about this Sixers playoff run as I've been in a very, very long time.
Third in net rating, fourth in offensive rating are the Sixers.
Yeah.
I don't know who y'all are when you play pickup, but I'm a PJ Tucker. I hit one corner three. Okay. We're going to have a highly efficient offense. I want to move the ball in transition. A lot of energy on defense. That's what I'm bringing to the table. Okay. 1-for-4 overall shooting. That's what you're getting from Ben Solak.
Are you getting any steals? Are you being scrappy? Are you diving on the ground?
Yeah,
what you
doing? An unnecessary half-court steal when like the game is chill too and like everybody's upset with me. Like, why are you trying this hard? This is the only value that I have. All right. No size, no length, no quickness. I just try.
I'm like the opposite, Cliff. I want to know what you're like. I'm more probably like a Nick Young where I'm just gunning and I'm shooting it like I shoot 60% from. Yeah, it's like I shoot 60% from three. I'm not getting inside. Like, I don't go to the lane. I'm not going to be in the lane. Some days I'll be hot and you'll be like, all right, this guy could play. Other days I'll be missing. You're like, this guy's killing us. I'm not going to play much defense. I'll be like, should we just do a little zone? Let's get a little zone going out here. I don't need to be sticking.
Yo,
with this
calling
guy.
Out two, three zone.
I'm not diving on the floor. I've never taken a charge. I'm not doing any of that. So that's more my charge. Cliff, what about you? Who are you, Cliff?
I love to play like a mellow style of basketball. Like, I love the mid-range. Okay. I like shooting threes. Kind of like when he was in Portland playing off of Dame and CJ a little bit. Just, you know, come up. Or like Bron, or like LA Mellow too. Like when he was coming up the screens and playing with Bron and all them, when Bron was driving to the basket and he just kicked it out to Mellow for a three. Like, I love that style of basketball. However, I will say that I do actually play defense though. Mellow don't play no defense and he knows it. But I take pride in playing defense. I like playing defense like kind of like Draymond Green a little bit, you know? I love playing defense. I take pride in it. So, you know, that's like my style of game. Again, I'm not nowhere near as good as any of them. I just like to think that my game mimics their game.
I love it. All right, this is great. I mean, this is easily the best segment we've had on the show that will come as no surprise to anybody who's listened. Cliff's group chat, we'll do it again next week on the Thursday show. Listen to the Sixers show. We had Chris Ryan and Raheem, right, Cliff? That one's already...
Last night.
That one's already in the feed, so you can listen to them talk more about that Sixers-Cavs game, Joel Embiid, and everything else. Ben and I, we'll see. Let's see what happens here in the next few days. Either if we need to do an emergency pod, we will. Otherwise, we'll certainly be back early next week. If things settle down, Benjamin, I'm going to have to start getting my draft spreadsheets ready and be firing questions your way to learn more about this. So maybe we'll just get into like number 10 pick, five guys or something who Ben thinks the Eagles could be looking at with the number 10 pick. We'll start getting into that big time, I think, starting next week because we're not, what, March 16th? So we got, what, like 5 weeks, five, 6 weeks until the draft. So that is coming up. All right. Thank you to everyone for listening. Remember, Don't forget about the ratings and the reviews and the subscribe, unsubscribe and all that. Just because it's the off season, it's not the off season for us. We're doing what, four podcasts on this feed this week between Ben and I and Raheem and Chris. So make sure you get all those out there. Thank you to Cliff for producing. As always, we will talk to you soon on the Ringers Philly Special.